the Mets are just overloaded with catchers, but the best one might be 21 years old, and you have a fan base that I think will go nuclear if he's sent back down to Syracuse.
Yeah, I don't think it's a might be. You know, I think it's pretty clear that Alvarez is the best option for this team. Just talk to pitchers. I mean, talk to the guys that are throwing to him. They love throwing to him. All of them love throwing to him.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Mets Pod presented by Tri-State Cadillac. This spring, be transformed during the Cadillac Move Up Sales event. This is your moment to step out of the ordinary and into the extraordinary. Visit your Tri-State Cadillac dealer today. And here's your reminder to subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can watch on SMY's YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcast. I'm your host, Connor Rogers, joined as always by my co-host, Joe DeMeo, and a very special guest, a actual good friend of the show in Steve Gelbs. Not just a reporter in Steve Gelbs or a Jets studio host, but a play-by-play man here and there as well. Gelbs, how we doing, man? It's great to see you.
Hey, listen, I am I'm in awe that I've been invited by a rising star in the industry and Connor Rogers.
Not
right
me.
Now. Finally got his just due. I know it's coming for Joe soon, but that was great, man. Forget about me. Forget about play-by-play studio host, but none of that matters. They're recognizing the talent of Connor Rogers, and I love it. I love to be in the presence.
Thanks, Gelbs. I was joking with you off the air that you were a penny stock investor, so that is much appreciated from me to you.
And what these guys are talking about is awfulannouncing.com actually has our guy, Connor Rogers, as a rising star in the sports media industry, and it's just crazy to see everything laid out. I know how much he does because he and I talk all the time. But when you just see it actually laid out in like written form, it's like, holy heck, this kid really goes.
Well, thank you, guys. I do appreciate it. You know, I hate talking about myself, so I'm going to completely steer this interview off the exit about the Mets as I get embarrassed. Gelbs, obviously this would have been a much different show if we had you on last week or the week before that. Joe and I have been kind of scratching and clawing on how to even discuss this team and try to shed some positive light or ways they could move in the right direction. And fortunately, they have done that in the last week. And there's no other way to start this interview than by asking you, what kind of energy have the kids brought? Because all of the headlines right now, Alonso's been great. Lindor's obviously had big moments. It looks like the rotation's getting right. But all the headlines are around the kids. And just from watching from afar, it seems like this team has found a totally different energy sparked by them.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that. I think more than anything, though, it's just because of what they've been able to do in big time spots. You know, it's not just about production. It's about when they've produced. And I think, you know, if you look back, it's not like Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez just got called up in the last 5 days and provided this energy. They've been around for a little while and they've been productive for a little while. But there was just something missing still from this group. And at the end of the day, that was the wins. And so this last week, to have them, all three of them, be a big-time spark in the big moments, those types of wins, I think, are what change the energy. And so, yeah, it's been in large part because of them, just because of the, again, the production. And they've been awesome to be around. I mean, they're really impressive young players, the way they carry themselves, the way that they approach the game and the work. But I think the way this season was going, whoever it was, the way that it needed to turn was nights like they had against Tampa and nights like they had, days like they had against Cleveland, because there was just, there was so much pressure building and so much frustration building that you could see, you could sense this tension. And I think when they won that first walk-off game, it's like everybody just finally exhaled a little bit and they were just able to get back to what they were doing a year ago. Now, I don't know where it goes from here. It's not like, you know, they've been gangbusters over these last five games. They've won a lot of close games, a lot of late games, but it does feel like, all right, maybe they're starting to build something now and maybe the energy and the ship has started to turn a little bit.
Connor had mentioned at the top when you joined about you doing play-by-play, and it was just a blast hearing you up there, and I thought you did a great job. But what was something you didn't realize about doing play-by-play in-game until you were actually in the moment and had to do it?
Man, there was so much. And I told Gary, I texted Gary after my last game, and I said, I always knew that you were a special talent, but you're remarkable, man. Like, it's incredible when you sit in that chair for a little bit and then go back down and just listen to Gary Cohen. It's incredible how ridiculously good he is. For me, there were so many things. The first one that surprised me was how difficult it can be to read a home run off the bat up there. I mean, when we, I think that first game, there were four home runs that the Mets hit, and I really only knew one of them was a home run off the bat, and that was Francisco Lindor. And so, you know, it's just a different vantage point for me. When you're sitting on the sidelines for 10 years, I pretty well know what's a home run off the bat. When you're sitting up top there, it's just different. And so that was something. The way that, you know, one of the pieces of advice that I got, and this was both from Gary and from our producer, Greg Picker, was, hey, you know, it's TV, people can see, so you don't need to be on time with everything. You'd rather be like a half second delayed and make sure you're describing things the right way. And so I would try to do that. But again, like listening back to what I did and then listening to Gary, you know, I'd really tried to play it safe. This was the first time I did play-by-play ever in my life. It wasn't like, you know, I had done it in the minors at all or in college or anything. I had never, ever, ever done it, which was a large part of the hesitation. So I tried to play it safe and, you know, not be overly descriptive and then, you know, mess up the description. But, you know, I was talking to Gary afterwards and he's like, hey, next step, like work on your vocab, work on, you know, different ways to describe things. And when he said that, and then I listened to it, he's got like 200 different adjectives at his disposal. It really is remarkable. So I had a great time. I'm excited to do it again. I'll get to do it again coming up a little bit, but it's a different challenge. And again, it gives you a whole new level of appreciation for what these guys do and what they bring to it on a daily basis.
So you brought up the home runs, which I couldn't imagine trying to judge in the moment, because I feel like it's scary if you overjudge it, then everybody's yes. like, oh, what an overreaction. So yes. I think you yes. did a great job of wisely playing it the other way, where you didn't overreact. So then, of course, everybody wonders about the home run call. Is it too try hard as a fill-in to have to craft a home run call, or is it something that you're looking at and going, it'll come naturally, or is it something that long-term you would like to develop?
Yeah, I think it's a little try hard at this point to go in there and try and come up with a home run call. You know, I think generally the best broadcast, I think one of the reasons our broadcast is regarded like it is because so much of it is authentic. You know, we don't really pre-plan or pre-package anything. And even, you know, talking to Gary about how he came up with the it's out of here call, it happened very organically for him. You know, he would just started saying it more and more and more, and it became kind of his signature. So, you know, I think if I went in there, I joked that my home run call would be boom goes the dynamite, because I was so concerned about having one of those boom goes the dynamite moments up there. but yeah, I mean, for me, it's all about just taking baby steps. And if I ever get to the point where, you know, I'm good enough at this and comfortable enough at this to do it more and more, maybe something develops, but I'm okay right now with just trying to figure out if it's a home run off the bat, let alone having to worry about some kind of a signature call. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, right now, I think it's very try hard to just go in there and say, all right, I've got three games under my belt. Let's come up with my signature call now.
Getting back on the field, the team has claimed all along they're calm and confident, even going through the rough weeks. And we know that's easier said than done sometimes, but you're there in the locker room every day. Did you actually see that quiet confidence the whole time? And what role did Buck's presence have in both the tough times and this week's turnaround? Because let's be honest, Buck got a lot of heat, and even a little on this podcast, because we're honest about how we feel over the last few weeks. So kind of the pulse of the clubhouse, where do you think we stand?
Yeah, I think they said the right things, but as I kind of alluded to earlier, you could feel a tension, definitely. It felt very different than last season's clubhouse did for most of the year. And I mean, that, let's be honest, last year they didn't really face any adversity until the very, very end. And so it was all good all the time for the most part. And when you've got a situation like that, it's going to be a loose clubhouse. The expectations of this year's team were clear going in. It's World Series or bust. And when you get off to the type of start that they did, and when you have a lot of veterans underperforming, I think it actually worked against them. And Buck talked about this, that sometimes you can want it too much. I think one of the signatures of this team last year, when you talked about, like, oh, they made a huge improvement with runners in scoring position last year from the year before, and they would always talk about how the mindset was, we don't feel like we have to get the runner in. We feel like we have an opportunity to get the runner in. And Lindor, during one of the bad stretches, talked about the mentality kind of reverting back, that guys were feeling like, okay, we have an opportunity now. We gotta make it happen. We've got to cash in. And so I think that they were playing tight, and I think that they were tense about what was happening. And that's why, again, I say that it wasn't just that they beat the Rays on that night, and it wasn't just that they beat the Guardians. It was that they did it in the fashion that they did. And it was like, okay. You know, they had so many of those moments last year that you could hang your hat on. And it was like, oh, this team is building something. And they just didn't exist before. And so I definitely felt like a huge exhale of energy after that first win. And I think they just kind of kept building on it in the days afterwards. And Buck even said this too, where he felt like they were starting to believe that something good was going to happen when they were down in games versus the alternative. And again, I think that kind of says it all. People undervalue just how difficult the mental side of this game is. And something as simple as believing, okay, we're down, but we're going to come back, versus believing, all right, we're down again, here we go. It matters a ton. And so I think that may have clicked. Again, got to see. It's only five games, but I think that mentality may have flipped a little bit now, and the feel over the last few days has been very different.
So despite the feel getting much better, the vibes are much better around the team, the fan base, everything right now in this moment, there's always an argument to be had, whether it's on Mets Twitter, the back pages, whatever it may be. And right now it's the catching situation. The big discussion is, what are the Mets going to do when ultimately Omar Narváez and Tomas Nido are ready to roll and are back, with Francisco Alvarez, the youngster who they really had no interest in him making the team at a spring training, kind of brought up out of necessity, and is hitting his stride right now. Looks comfortable offensively, looks comfortable defensively. Gelbs, how do you see this playing out? And Gary Sanchez is on the team right now. So the Mets are just overloaded with catchers, but the best one might be 21 years old, and you have a fan base that I think will go nuclear if he's sent back down to Syracuse.
Yeah, I don't think it's a might be. You know, I think it's pretty clear that Alvarez is the best option for this team. And I understand in this day and age with roster construction and you know, there's going to be at least a discussion internally about, he's the only guy that we can send down with options and not lose anybody. And so, you know, there's definitely going to be that conversation. I don't need to make that decision. I guess I'm glad, but for me, it's pretty simple. For me, he's the best catcher you got. He's been really impressive defensively, not just with the metrics that sometimes can be misleading, but just talk to pitchers. I mean, talk to the guys that are throwing to him. They love throwing to him. All of them love throwing to him. They love his work ethic. They love just the amount of research he does every day, and how comfortable he's getting in these pitchers meetings, just kind of talking about what he sees. And I just think he provides a dynamic that nobody else, none of the other three, are going to provide. I'm not saying that he's going to be consistently fantastic offensively. He's had his peaks and valleys, but he provides a pop and an energy that they are desperate for. Even last year when things were going great, the one negative about the offense was they did not have enough power. And frankly, for the most part this season, if Pete Alonso is not hitting home runs, this offense was not productive. And now, if you've got Alvarez and Beatty and maybe Vientos too playing on a regular basis, it just has a threat. It's a different look at the back end where they can get back into games the way they did down 5-0 against Cleveland in a way that they really were not built to do before. And so, you know, for me, it's not a discussion. If he keeps going at this rate, the sample size is large enough now. I mean, you know, you talk about sample size all the time. And I just happened to be looking this up before we came on. Since April 23rd now, so almost a full month, Alvarez is batting 279 with a 953 OPS. It's almost a month. And he's just going to keep getting better. The kid is just going to keep getting better. So, you know, I'm not trying to disparage any of these veterans, but they don't provide the ceiling and they don't provide as much production, quite frankly, as the kid. And so, you know, I don't know. I guess it could happen, but if he keeps going at this rate, I don't know how you option Alvarez down just to maintain, you know, roster flexibility and players on the roster. I don't know how you do it, but again, not my decision.
I think the X factor on the offense is really Starling Marte. This is a guy that was so consistent all of last year. I think you know what you're getting largely from the other big cogs in the lineup, like day to day, like Lindor has been up and down a bit, but you know how he's going to do. And Alonso, Marte's turned it on a bit of late over the last week, 10 days. His OPS is back over 800. What are you seeing from him day to day? Does it seem like he's still kind of getting his legs under him from his offseason surgeries, or where do you see where Starling Marte is at right now?
Yes, it does. He never will use it as an excuse, and forget about telling the media. He doesn't use it as an excuse with his coaches, with the manager. I mean, they press him on it, and he will never, ever say that he's dealing with something or in pain or not 100%. It's just not the way he is. But, you know, it's clear that he has not ramped up to full speed yet. I think the signs are good that it's starting to come. Even before that home run, I think Ron was talking about his bat starting to look a little quicker. And, you know, even the stolen base production has been there, which it really wasn't last year because he was dealing with that stuff that we didn't know about. For me, I would agree with you, though, that he is the key to this Mets offense. And he was last year. We saw what happened when he went out that last month. It was a totally different look. And I think if you look at the way that this roster is constructed and this offense is constructed, because it is not a team full of home run hitters, you need to have some dynamic offensive players. And that's what Marte brings at 100%. I mean, he can get on base and then he can put the pressure on the pitcher and he's running all over the place and just causing havoc, wreaking havoc. He's a guy that is just, you know, there are very few of them in the league when he's right. It's almost like Trey Turner when Trey Turner gets on first base and it's just like, you don't know what's going to happen. So I think at the end of the day, I think he'll get there. And I think that's why I've never personally been all that concerned with the offense. Like for me, when I look at the way this season started, it was always about, and still is always about, the starting pitching. Because I think the offense will produce enough. And I think these guys, even that have gotten off to rough starts, there's enough back there to know that they're going to get there. But Marte is the key for me offensively at the end of the day.
Gelbs, you brought up the next thing I wanted to ask you about, which is the starting pitching right now. And it feels like, you know, obviously Verlander has had some tough moments, but we also saw vintage Verlander as well on Sunday Night Baseball. Max pitched very differently than we've seen him pitch with the curveballs and throwing a lot more off speed. Senga feels like he's found his stride as well after kind of a rocky couple weeks there. But we know the back end of the rotation has been maybe the biggest problem. McGill doesn't work deep into games. Peterson has not been what we expected. Carrasco hasn't given them much. Can this rotation survive? Do you think that with those big three at the top, that's enough while they wait for a guy like Quintana to make his way back as well?
If you would have asked me that a week ago, I wouldn't have been sure that the answer was yes. I think now a couple of things have changed. A, Quintana got the all clear and he was waiting on the all clear to really ramp up quickly. So there's an expectation that Quintana's return is not too far in the offing. And so the fact that we kind of have a timeline on that and you look at it and you say, okay, maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. Yeah, they can get by. I also think that the last start for Senga, and I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, so maybe at another one in Chicago tonight, but we're taping this before that start in Chicago. That last start was really encouraging for Kodai Senga. He, to me, was the key to all of this. They needed Senga to provide a little bit of stability and consistency. I never, and I still don't have any concerns about those top two in Verlander and Scherzer beyond the health. I mean, you're always going to be concerned about guys at that age and their ability to stay on the field. But even Max, with the inconsistency to start the year, I always thought, even if that fastball velocity never came back to where it was, if you're around Max Scherzer on a daily basis, you understand the smarts, the competitiveness. Like, he was always going to find a way to be productive with whatever he had. And so, you know, I think you've started to see this over the last couple of starts with him. So, you know, for me, if Senga can give you not quite what he gave you in that last start, but some length and productivity, then I think you can get by fine with McGill, and we'll see with Carrasco as you await the return of Quintana. So I'm kind of, again, changing my mind on that, but I think we need to see a little bit more over the next couple of weeks to make sure that Senga is really consistent and that, you know, McGill can maintain, at least, again, not giving you the length, but he's been decent production wise recently, as you await the return of Quintana.
You're in Chicago right now. Are we going to get another cup snake on live TV? And are we going to be careful with the live mic?
You know, it's so funny you asked that, because about a half hour ago, I actually texted Jake, the cup snake guy, just to see if he was going to be at the games at all tonight. He hasn't gotten back to me. I guess he's gotten too big so far. But
I'm sleeping on the hangover. It's probably what he's doing.
Yeah, it was a little early to shoot him a text. He actually... So last year, he sent me a picture like a month after that whole incident, and it was just a selfie of him in the bleachers during a day game with a cup snake behind him, and it just said, "We miss you, Stevie." So I'm hoping to see him again. I don't know if we'll put him on TV again, but that guy was – what a legend. What an absolute legend. Looking back, it could have gone very, very wrong, but for my sake, it was gold.
Incredible television. All right, Gellums, I'm not letting you get out of here without this one, of course. I want to ask you about a veteran, future Hall of Famer, coming to New York, not named Verlander, not named Scherzer. When will we see Aaron Rodgers throw out that first pitch at Citi Field? And what's our fall looking like? Hopefully a Mets playoff race here alongside a pretty hot start for the Jets as we are in studio. I would say Sundays, but Gellums, we're in studio this year. Any given day. It could be Friday. It could be Monday nights.
And it's going to be crazy. How about the flexing now of Thursday night games? I mean.
By the way, terrible. Terrible. And I'm glad the Jets voted against it. They were one of six or eight teams, or whatever it was.
Absolutely terrible. You know, I have been working hard behind the scenes to get Aaron Rodgers to come out. And I don't know that it's going to happen. And I said, like, it's got to be more than Aaron Rodgers if you're the Mets. You've got to get Garrett Wilson out there. 100%. That's the obvious one. You got to get Garrett Wilson out there. You know, high school buddies with Brett Beatty.
His former quarterback.
So, I don't know. Hopefully, listen, we know that the Mets have tried, right? Aaron Rodgers said publicly that they reached out to him and the Yankees didn't. We'll see. I don't know. I am loving the way that Aaron Rodgers is embracing this right now. I am very excited for this upcoming season. You know that I believe the last Mets game of the regular season is also a Sunday night game against the Chiefs, I believe.
Okay.
So I may be working double duty that night. But yeah, it's going to be – we got a lot going on this fall. We got a lot going on, Connor.
It's going to be awesome, man. And we can't thank you enough this time of year for coming on the show, because we know you're just running around every game, traveling. As we said, you're in Chicago right now. Gellums, you are not only a great talent but a great friend, and it's always great to catch up with you, man. So thank you.
Anytime, fellas. Happy to do it. Keep it up.
A huge thanks to Gellums, of course, for coming on the show. A lot of insight, a lot of fun. Future play-by-play man, Steve Gellums, who knows? But listen, Joe, we had not only a great week watching the Mets, but going to Citi Field. We were there Friday night, thanks to our lovely sponsor, Cadillac, of course. We were in the Cadillac Club, which is kind of the hot new buzzy spot. I saw it on the ESPN broadcast. They were pumping it up. So we got to take in a game. Listen, let's not deny it, Joe. Couldn't be a more perfect game to go to. Mets Guardians, the Beatty home run, the Alvarez home run, the Pete Grand Slam, obviously extra innings mayhem. So the actual game itself was unbelievable. Maybe the best Mets game I've ever been to, at least in recent memory as well. But a lot of the mailbag questions today were, give us a review of the Cadillac Club. People are dying to know what it's like. Joe, you and I were smiling ear to ear. We loved the Cadillac Club, and we're not saying that because we have Cadillac as a great sponsor. We like genuinely were looking at each other and was like, this is an incredible way to watch a baseball game. Whether it was the buffet, the bao buns, whether it was the beer and wine, the comfort of the chair, shaking the cage, of course, of the fence, we had a little bit of fun with. Joe, I know you agree. It was just incredible, man.
It was incredible. It's they truly make you feel like a VIP, and I am a not VIP.
We were like, no, don't do this for us. Yeah. Do it for the people that are here every day.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, look, I basically didn't have to open the door all night. The chair was comfortable. Having the TV was a great touch because it took us probably half a game to figure out the trajectory of where a ball actually was going. I felt like I had a good vibe of what was a home run and what wasn't, but how many times did we hit I think there was a pop-up and you were like, stay in play. And Beatty caught it in fair territory.
He looked at me like, so, that wasn't even close.
Yeah. Yeah. So the gauge was tough, but so comfortable. The beer, the food, the Shake Shack delivered during the game, the desserts after. Let me tell you, if you're able to find your way into the Cadillac Club, I could not recommend it more. And like you said, Connor, nothing to do necessarily with them being a great sponsor of ours. I would hype this up regardless, but a really great experience. Even going right at the beginning, when you walk in, they give you the wristband, first drink, they treat you really well, and food good, drink good, everything worked out. And like you said, most importantly, we walked out with one of the better Mets games that you've ever been to and I've ever been to, and we got to take it in together. Was really a blast.
Two notes from me. One, Starling Marte in right field, incredible the entire game, interacting with the fans. And I mean the entire game. He is interacting with the fans. He is constantly throwing baseballs out to kids. He had a great time in right field. That was a really unique part of the experience. And then the second thing I'll say, I'll give you a little advice. If you are going to a game and you're going to watch from the Cadillac Club, get there early. Get there at least an hour before the game. It opens up 90 minutes before the game. Eat at the buffet then. Don't overeat, because in the third inning, as Joe said, they come around with Shake Shack. And towards the end of the game, they do dessert. So choose wisely. Don't overeat at the buffet before the game. Have just enough to be satisfied. Have a couple beers or whatever you're into. And then third inning, Shake Shack. Unbelievable. No, you don't miss three innings waiting on the line. Unbelievable experience. So Cadillac Club, 10 out of 10. I will go whenever they want us to, Joe. I'm just putting that out there. It's
give
no problem.
Give us
for
the
me.
Call, Cadillac. I'm ready to go back.
I'll clear my schedule. So let's get into the scoreboard. Wild week for the scoreboard. This was definitely the most fun we've had with our scoreboard predictions, and we will have some for this week ahead. Wild results from last week. The first one, how many Mets wins in the next six games? We were very afraid here, Joe, as they were playing the Rays and the Guardians. Over-under push was set at 3. I went with a push of 3. Joe, you went with the over. The Mets won 5 of 6 games. Great job, Joe. Point to you. The next one, how many innings for Max Scherzer in his next start? The over-under push was set at 5. Joe, we both wisely went over. Max pitched 6. Point for each of us. The next one, how many quality starts in the next 6 games? The Mets never pitch quality starts, it feels like. The over-under push was set at just 2 quality starts in those 6 games. Joe, you pushed. I went under. The Mets had 4 quality starts in the 6 games. No points for each of us. The final one, how many Mets home runs in the next 6 games? The over-under was set at, and the push was set at 3, because the Mets did not hit a home run in that 4-game stretch against the Nationals. The Mets hit 13 home runs, Joe. You pushed at 3. I went over, and I said, this is a Hail Mary. Hopefully the Mets hit some home runs. They did. They hit 13 home runs. They obliterated the number that our producer Jeff set of 3. Point goes to me. We tied for the week, 2-2. We are tied on the season, Joe, at 7-7. Obviously, this is going to be some kind of stretch run.
what's funny is I think if we listen back, I'm almost positive I sarcastically said last week, Connor's saying the Mets are going to hit 12 home runs, and they even exceeded they my 13. Sarcastic number.
Yep. It truly insane.
Gotta love it. What a week. What a week.
So for this week, three in Chicago against the Cubs, and then they are in Colorado for three against the Rockies. Let's get to the first one, Joe, and I will give you the floor. The over-under push for how many Mets wins is set at 4 in the next 6 games. What are you rolling with?
I'm going to push. I think they keep rolling at the pace they are. I think they're going to go 2 out of 3, and we'll be back with another positive show next week. Because I'll tell you, these positive shows just have a better feel to them.
Oh, yeah. The vibe is immaculate right now. I will go with a push as well. I will gladly take the Mets taking 4 out of 6, and that's where I think they land on. I'm with you. The next one is Mets quality starts. Once again, a reminder, 6 innings, 3 runs or less. The over-under push line is set at 3 quality starts in 6 games. Joe, I will go... Oh, this one is really tricky. I'm going to go with a push again here. I think it's right at 3. It's hard for me to think they're going to go over. So I'll sit with a push here. They did this last week. They went over that line. But it's just tough to see them replicating that with the state of the rotation right now.
It is generally tough to see it, but... I'm riding high right now. I'm feeling good about where the Mets are at. We're tied on the season here. I'm going to go over. I'm going to say they'll get 4, and we'll have a much more positive conversation about the starting rotation this time next week.
All right, the next one. How many games does Mark Vientos start in the next 6? The over-under push is set at 3 games in the next 6. Joe, what do you like?
I'm going to go push. I haven't looked ahead at the pitching matchups, but I think he'll surely play against lefties. And, you know, we'll see how they split up him and Daniel Vogelbach at DH against right-handers. So for the sake of it, I will say they'll split, which means that's a push, and 3 for Mark Vientos in the next 6.
I'll go under here. I think it's going to be 2 for Vientos, which I won't agree with. I wouldn't be happy, but I wouldn't be shocked if they really, really try to ride Vogelbach here against the righties and continue to try to push a turnaround for him. And they use Vientos, like you said, Joe, against lefties. And then Vientos, of course, can come into the game at any moment off the bench. Don't think that's what they should do, but think it'll be an under. Our last one here. Mets home runs in the next 6 games. Think of the locations here, right? One of these series is at Colorado. The number is set at 10, Joe. I'm feeling good. I'm going to go over. I'm going over the 10 mark. Maybe I'm insane. The casino has clearly caught on. They have overset this line. I think Pete stays hot. I think we see a little power surge from Lindor, and we know the kids are hitting with some power as well. I'll take over the number of 10. I think you're not as confident.
I will go under 10, but I do think given the locations, we will get close. I think our resident sports book here just is riding high too off of this stretch. So I will go under 10, but I do think it'll be pretty close, like 8 or 9.
All right. And that is our scoreboard predictions for the week as Joe and I are tied at the season 7-7. Let's go down on the farm. And it's a weird times in Mets land. How many down on the farm segments since the birth of the Mets pod, Joe, have we done on Vientos, Beatty, Alvarez, Mauricio this year? And he's still down there for now. Let's go a little deeper. Let's look at the pitching, right? Everybody's wondering what arms in this system exist and how are they doing? Let's start with Mike Vassell, Joe, who obviously has been quite the find so far for the Mets.
Mike Vassell's been fantastic, performing as good as any pitcher in the system. The only one really comparing is a kid in Brooklyn, Tyler Stewart, who was drafted last year. But I actually wrote an article for SNY.TV, which you can check out now, about Vassell, and talk to a couple scouts that have seen him. And then, of course, talking about his stat line. This is a kid that when he was going into the 2018 draft as a high school senior, out of Massachusetts, he was considered to be a top 25 prospect in that draft class. And he opted out of the draft, which every year you'll see a couple of those occur, and decide to go through his commitment to the University of Virginia. Virginia, they tweaked his mechanics a bit. They made him more of a sinker slider guy. He lost some velocity, kind of just mediocre or less, honestly, at college, posted a 4.74 ERA in his 3 years at Virginia. The Mets took him in the 8th round of the 2021 draft. And this is, it's an experiment of how baseball scouting can be years in the making. The Mets were on Vassell in high school, and they decided they wanted to take a shot on him out of college, and they didn't just take a shot, be like, oh, he was a good high school prospect. This is a kid that they're like, we can turn him back into the pitcher he was, and that's what we've seen. It's a four-pitch mix. It's a fastball that sits 94 to 96. It'll touch 97 or 98, 12 to 6 curve. They've tweaked his slider a bit, so it has a little more vertical break and not quite sweeper-ish like an Adam Ottavino slider. It's got that kind of downward trajectory. Changeup lags behind, but so far in 37 innings for Binghamton, 2.19 ERA. Strikeout rate, I believe it's 11 point something. I can't scroll over on baseball reference right now. But yeah, what's huge, he has cut his walks down significantly. He has a 1.5 walks per nine this year. He has been fantastic. He's in the conversation to be the top pitching prospect in the organization. And I would say he is the highest rated pitcher that's closest to the major leagues. And three scouts that I spoke to all said to me, they would not be shocked if Mike Vassell made his big league debut in 2023.
Yeah, Joe, you make a great point about Vassell, right? You look at his final season at Virginia. I mean, he started 16 games, 4.52 ERA that final college season. I think the number, though, that jumps out to me, he was only striking out eight batters over nine for a prospect. You know, that's something that's a little bit alarming. Now you look at him, of course, this year with the Mets in Binghamton in Double A, and not only has he been phenomenal with the 2.19 ERA and seven starts, he's, like you said, he's striking out 11.2 batters over nine innings. So the Mets have taken the flyer on Vassell in the eighth round of 2021, clearly done plenty of work with him and got him back to being a pitcher that he was once expected to be, not the guy we saw in that final college season. So this could be a diamond in the rough finding for the Mets in a system that desperately, desperately needs that for pitching. So love everything we're hearing and seeing with him. On the other end, the Mets second round pick from 2022, Blade Tidwell, is down in Brooklyn. He's been struggling, Joe. This is somebody with some pretty big expectations, of course, as this farm system looks to stockpile arms. He's made six starts this year, 6.56 ERA. And the thing you pointed out right away in our text chain was he's just walking the ballpark. 6.9 walks over nine innings right now. I mean, that's in a stratosphere that's just terrifying. On the flip side, you look at it and go, if he can get his control back and get closer to the pitcher he was for Tennessee, things will change pretty rapidly. But obviously struggles for Tidwell so far.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a tough stretch, but he is missing bats. His stuff is there. I mean, he's up to 98 on the fastball, wipeout slider, decent changeup. He's got to work on the control and command. This is his first full pro season. He's from the South. This is a guy that's probably not used to the cold of Brooklyn and upstate, you know, and Brooklyn's not upstate, but, you know, up in the Northeast. Yeah, he's not used to that in April, so I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but the stuff is there. He's still my top pitcher in the system. I know some people have already talked about potentially having Vassell jump him, and I think that has gotten closer now. But to me, I think the sample size is still too small to take a guy that, you know, had he not had shoulder tendonitis as last year at Tennessee, he would have been someone the Mets would have had to take with one of their first round picks, and they were able to land him in the second round. So I think, have some patience with Blade Tidwell. The stuff is there. He's just got to control and command it a little bit better, but exciting prospect nonetheless. And having him and Vassell as the top two pitchers in the system, I think gives Mets fans some hope here over the next year or two that there are some homegrown pitchers coming through the pike.
Absolutely. All right. And speaking of the Brooklyn Cyclones, if you're thinking of a trip to Brooklyn for the next homestand, a couple of notes here. Friday night, two tickets and two 24-ounce beers for just $20. Saturday night, start your summer with a boom on the Cyclones' first fireworks show of the year. And on Sunday, the fun continues. The first 1,000 fans in attendance get a Polar Bear Pete Polar Tumbler, free Dippin' Dots for the first 500 kids, a pregame catch on the field, and postgame kids run the bases. For full details and tickets, visit BrooklynCyclones.com. And of course, here's your reminder, you're listening to the Mets Pod presented by Tri-State Cadillac. Subscribe to the Mets Pod at Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can watch on SMY's YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to take a quick 15-second break. And we'll be right back answering your mailbag questions.
This spring, be transformed during the Cadillac Move-Up sales event. This is your moment to step out of the ordinary and into the extraordinary. Visit your Cadillac showroom today.
Welcome back. It is time for our mailbag segment to close out the show. This is the point of every single episode where we answer your questions. Let's jump right into it. This first one from a good friend, Zach Petersill, ZP. He said, if when all four catchers are healthy, what's your ideal catching situation? You can't imagine Alvarez is anything but majority starter at this point, but would love your guys' thoughts as always. Joe, I think the discussion at the top, like ZP mentioned, like we talked about Gelbs, is Alvarez, Alvarez, Alvarez. But there's an important discussion after that. How do you see this playing out?
Well, first, let's start with Alvarez. And this show, we always talk about roster construction. We take into account options. We talk about it ad nauseum with the bullpen over the offseason. But in the case of Francisco Alvarez, with an OPS over 900 in essentially the last month, let's call it, options, schmoptions. This man better not be sent back to AAA. Last week, we had the little rant session. You want a rant session? Let's have the Mets send Francisco Alvarez to AAA just to carry guys that don't have options. However, let's put that to the side. Let's hope the Mets do the right thing and Francisco Alvarez remains up with the big league team. I think Omar Narvaez fits best as the second catcher.
Not even close.
I think he's a lefty to complement Alvarez at the right side. He has a big contract. He signed for $7 million this year, and I believe $7 million player option next year. Tomas Nito is, you know, I love Tomas Nito. I think he's been a good backup for this team. I don't even know if they'll have to designate him for assignment necessarily. Like, I think catching is at a point in the sport that you can probably flip Tomas Nito for something. Maybe it's not some massive piece, but maybe you can flip him for a middle reliever because, I mean, we talk about this bullpen and, you know, David Robertson's been largely great. Adovino's had his struggles recently, but he's been pretty good. Drew Smith's been great. Brooks Raley's looked good since he came back. But then after that, it's kind of like, what are you doing? Maybe you can flip someone like Nito for a middle reliever to help you out because he's under contract next year for, I think, $1.7 million or something like that. Some small sum that any team can afford that. So for me, I think the optimal situation is Alvarez and Narvaez. Nito, unfortunately, I think could find his way squeezed out. But at the same time, Connor, this stuff always works itself out. We say that on this show all the time. We'll think everything's great, and then, you know, maybe Narvaez will have a setback or Nito will tweak a hamstring. Or, you know, I don't wish injury on anyone, but that kind of stuff seemingly always works.
Yeah, I think when you look at this, this feels like a rip the Band-Aid off situation. I mean, sometimes you have to start too far ahead and work your way backward. In 2024, Joe, we know two things, right? We know with catching, Omar Narvaez is going to be on this team with the player option that he has, and Francisco Alvarez is going to be on this team. We know those things. Where is there room for Tomas Nito in 2024? And then you work your way backward and go, Alvarez is what we would deem ahead of schedule. He's a 21-year-old that is significantly ahead of schedule defensively, and is starting to be the offensive player we have heard about in the minor leagues for a long time. At 21 years old. If that's the case, rip the Band-Aid off. You nailed it. Emotionally, you like Tomas Nito, right? He's your ideal backup catcher in this league for cheap. But right now, there's not a spot for him. And if that's the case, make that decision now of what's best for the team winning baseball games. Not flexibility or keeping veterans or anything like that. So then to my other point, I think in this conversation, Narvaez has become drastically underrated. And I'm really glad you brought up the point about the splits, right? Now you have a lefty to be on the same roster as a catcher, a veteran catcher, to Alvarez being that righty. Narvaez is a guy that in 2018, full season, 794 OPS. 2019, full season, or I should say 97 games in 18. 2019, full season, 813 OPS. The 40 games he played in the COVID season down year, you kind of rip that up and throw it out. It was the case for plenty of people. 2021, All-Star, 743 OPS. Narvaez is a good major league player at the catching position offensively. If you have Alvarez and Narvaez, that is really exciting to me. I think this conversation has somehow become a doom and gloom combo, when on the other hand of it, it's so simple. You have a young star catcher and you have a good veteran catcher coming off the IL. That's it. It's done. There's no other conversation to be had here unless you're talking about something besides the Mets trying to win baseball games.
And I think, too, a lot of teams would probably be envious of the Mets catching situation. And when you look at Alvarez, it's not like he's struggling mightily and we're just like, he's got to work through it at the major league level. He is going to give you the best opportunity to win right now, and he's the future. So that's like the perfect combination. I think for now, it's just a lot of chatter. And I know Andy Martino had written on SNY.TV that there's some pitchers who would be very upset if Alvarez were sent down. Gelb said to us here at the top of the show that the pitchers love throwing to him. So not only is it a risk of decreasing the productivity on the field, you're actually running the risk of decreasing the morale in the locker room if you send down a kid performing the way he is. And, you know, I was saying this, I think I said to you on Friday night when we were together, Alvarez, like, of the young kids, Alvarez brings something that even Beatty and Vientos don't. He has that swag, that confidence. And, you know, Beatty's confident, but he's, like, quietly confident. He knows what he's doing. He's going to perform. But Alvarez, just everything about him, he's so engaged all the time. And he's just got this confidence that you feel like this kid has that all-star potential. And it feels like he's getting closer and closer to reaching that profile.
I'll close it out with this. This year, Francisco Alvarez, in 28 games, less than 100 plate appearances, he's hit 5 home runs, okay? Last year, in 159 games, Tomas Nito and James McCann combined for 6 home runs. 6. Hmm. We spent the whole offseason, and the one before that, by the way, saying this team needs power. And where are the holes that you can get it? Not the, can Pete go from, you know, 40 home runs to 50? That's not the conversation. The conversation is, where can you squeeze more home runs out of positions that have question marks at a minimum? It's the easiest answer in the world. It's the easiest answer in the world. That's analytics for you folks. 5 home runs in less than 30 games compared to 2 guys that combined for a full season having 6. This is a very simple conversation for me, and I think ultimately logic will prevail for the Mets. Our next question here is from Patrick Chamberlain. And this is me just kind of putting it to a megaphone to our audience. I don't think you and I are going to actually workshop in this moment, but I'd like to read some of the responses over the next week that we get. Patrick Chamberlain asked, can you guys workshop a better nickname for the youngsters than the Baby Mets? I think they deserve better. Do you like Baby Mets, Joe?
It's okay. I'm not like, yeah, it's all right. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be Mr. Creative. So I would say this should definitely be something curated by our listeners. But yeah, it's okay. Like, I get it. And if that's what Francisco Lindor wants to call him, I'm not going to fight him about it. But certainly if there's something better out there, we want to hear it.
All right. Our last one is from Jack Bennett. Jack asked us, do you see Roddy Mauricio as more of a trade candidate or a future piece of this team? Joe, my take is, don't you think this has changed in about a 3-month span?
Really quickly. I mean, it feels like Roddy Mauricio is a part of the Mets' future. And we said this on the show weeks ago when they still were playing him at shortstop every single day. Even if you intend to trade him one day, because, you know, anytime anyone could be available in the right deal, but they were just playing him at shortstop. And it's just like, at least while you have him, pretend as if you're going to develop him to be a piece of your team. And he's been playing second almost every day. He sprinkles in some shortstop here and there. But overall, talking to people down there, it seems like he's been okay at second. He's been fine. It's not been certainly a huge negative or even a huge positive. He looks relatively comfortable over there. And what's big is he just continues to hit. And that was one of the fears that Epler and the Mets front office had said as to why they hadn't tried him at different positions, was because they didn't want it to impact his offense adjusting at, you know, a new level. And Mauricio just keeps hitting As of this recording, he still leads all of minor league baseball in hits. He leads all of minor league baseball in doubles. We've talked about the exit velocity. This is, you know, 110, 112, 107. These are, you know, consistent numbers we're seeing from this kid. So he's still got to elevate the ball a little more. I'm willing to have some patience with him. I think McNeil at second is ideal right now. And Canna in left, you know, he's going to do a little bit here, a little bit there, but throw him in the nine hole. I think that's a good spot for him. But let's let Mauricio continue to do this for a little bit longer. And, you know, if 3 weeks, 4 weeks from now, he's still hitting 330, 340 and smacking doubles, you know, maybe a month from now, he's at 30, 35 doubles. Who the heck knows? At that point, I think he is warranting consideration for a look at the big league level. And like you said, Connor, 3 months ago, last offseason, I would have told you that Ronny Mauricio is one of the prime pieces of trade bait for the Mets leading into the deadline. But, you know, maybe we're looking at a 2024 situation where they have at least three of these four young kids in everyday roles.
Joe, here's one for you. I'll close out the show with. Mauricio has 11 doubles in his last 12 games. I mean, and it's not like he had one game where he hit four doubles. He basically hits at least a double every single game. It's, and I know he's got pretty good speed, but he can hit in the gaps. He could hit for power. I mean, we're excited for Ronny Mauricio, and I think it's been arguably the nicest surprise of the Mets season, right? Obviously, we've been so hype on Beatty and Alvarez, and even to a minor extent, Vientos, that them having any form of success this year is like, okay, I'm not surprised. I'm right. Just happy.
I mean, yeah, Alvarez was the number one prospect in baseball. Beatty was a top 10, top 15 prospect. Pick. Like they're doing what they're supposed to do. And right. Mauricio's regaining everything that he once had, because he was once talked about as one of the better prospects in baseball. And then just his performance and the way his approach really dropped him off lists. He's back up in top 100 lists. I think Ronny Mauricio has regained a lot of value, and I'm really excited to see him get an opportunity here, because I do think that time is coming. And then, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out from there.
Mauricio just turned 22 years old in April, so the future is bright for him, and we think the future is bright for all of these young Mets. And that wraps up today's show. This is the Mets Pod presented by Tri-State Cadillac. This spring, be transformed during the Cadillac Move Up Sales event. This is your moment to step out of the ordinary and into the extraordinary. Visit your Tri-State Cadillac dealer today. And remember to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode at Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Of course, if you want to watch, you can watch right on SMY's YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.